live from Clear Channel's Purple Tower of Power. It's the Terry Miner Show.
Well, now, this is fascinating with this kid aloft over Colorado in this hot air balloon or whatever that thing. It looks like a flying saucer like you'd see from a bad sci-fi movie in the 1960s. On today's show, Gary Burbank's in the studio with me here. Gary, good to see you, brother.
Hey, Terry, nice to see you, too.
This is an odd way to start the day, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm watching TV right now, Terry. I can't be doing this.
You can't be busy with the radio.
There's no kid in there.
Burbank's written a book. Yeah, that's what we're wondering, too. Yeah. Burbank's written a book called Voices in My Head. We're going to talk about that, talk about some other things going on in the world. But right now, we're going to focus on this kid on the balloon, Mike Erler. You remember Mike Erler?
Oh, yeah, Mike from the days of the old balloon races and things.
You started him up. Hey, Mr. Erler.
Hey, how are you?
We're on the air. Gary Burbank's on me today, too, just for a little throwback for
hey,
you.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
All right, Mr. Erler, this is eerie to think about if there's a person loose in this thing. Anyway, for those of you just joining
us. What's the story on the kid? How did he get inside, did they say?
We don't. I hadn't gotten to that. It's just somebody tapped me on the shoulder for 10 minutes ago and said, there's a kid loose in the air over Colorado in a balloon. So
you thought, well, I've done that.
Anyway, I was just, indeed. I've always thought about the lawn chair thing, the guy with the balloons and the pellet gun, and he starts shooting out balloons when he wants to descend.
And then, Terry, he drops his pellet gun, and he was really in trouble then.
You know, Mike, I've been up in hot air balloons a bunch of times in promotional things, and I have yet to ever land without busting my knee.
Oh, you had a bad pilot.
Is that what it was? Yeah, okay. I need to sue that guy at some point, man. I was in Detroit, and they had this promotion. I had to go up in a balloon, and it was in the middle of downtown. And there were buildings all around us, and they were going to cut the rope, untie the ropes. And we were supposed to float straight up. But I noticed there was some wind. And I asked the pilot, I said, what happens if we hit against a building? He said, oh, we come straight down. I said, fast? He goes, real fast. I said, I'm not doing this. And so I didn't. I went up. They got the balloon. I went up where the ropes held it, and I was supposed to throw some balls out. Mm-hmm. And somebody gets a prize, and that was it.
That's a tethered balloon ride.
A tethered balloon ride, yeah. That time I didn't get hurt, actually. That's the one time.
One of the few.
Yeah.
You're like one of those Memphis wrestlers you used to hang around with.
Jackie Fargo.
Always taking one upside the head. Taking it for the team.
Yeah, man.
Well, anyway, we'll keep an eye on this story, as it were, and hopefully it doesn't turn into a tragedy. But it's thoroughly bizarre, to say the least.
I'm with Mike. I don't see how a kid could have gotten in there, and who's saying why and all that. You don't really hear about that yet.
Figure it out. Huh. It's probably some Clear Channel radio station stunt.
There you There's go. I never thought about that, yeah.
Listen to Q92.
If you weren't sitting here, I figured Terry's in that balloon.
Mr. Erler, a pleasure speaking with you again.
Thank you.
All right, see, that's Mike Erler, legendary balloonist in these here parts. Gary Burbank, you know, from WLW in Cincinnati for the last quarter century, and now retired from there. And, of course, he spent time here at WHS. I want to play a little clip of you later on the show.
Really?
I found some this morning.
Oh, no. How much did I play it?
Let's see your wallet.
Okay.
You're carrying a fat one.
Well, you won all my money on golf this morning.
I didn't. That wasn't me.
He's turning pro soon, but.
And author Bill Brantz is in H.W. Brantz is in a studio. He's speaking tonight at Filson Historical Society. We'll get details of that. And talk about President FDR in only a few minutes. So you have to reach back to your last
President
recession.
Fitter. He's one of my favorites.
Fitter. Come on, let's go dancing. All right, coming right back here at 84 WHAS. Terry Miner's here. Gary Burbank's in the studio with us for a while this afternoon. He's got a book signing coming up tonight. Also in town, an author by the name of H.W. Brantz. His book is called Traitor to His Class, and it's about FDR Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Mr. Brantz, good afternoon to you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Did you meet Mr. Burbank over here?
I did.
He's a radio icon. Where do you live, by the way?
I live in Austin, Texas.
Oh, that's a fine place. What happened there? Did the governor's mansion just burn down? Did you hear about that, Burbank?
I didn't see it on Austin City Limits. If I didn't see it on Austin City Limits, it didn't happen.
He's a musician. He always thinks. Did something happen over there? Was there a fire?
Well, the governor's mansion did burn about a year and a half ago. But there was an Austin City Limits Music Festival last weekend, which turned into a
you should have been there.
Yeah, man, I should have been there.
No should doubt. Have. You missed that one. All right, it is 3:38 at 84 WHS. We kind of got started off on an odd note today. Gary Burbank and I actually been spending the day together because we played golf earlier. Gary, good to see you again.
We played golf earlier?
We played golf early this morning.
That was amazing.
That seemed like yesterday, didn't it?
And everyone looked at us like we were insane going out there. But it was fun. Nobody else on the course.
The rain didn't bother us at all.
No.
There were a few sprinkles this morning. All right, Garrett has a book that he's done the book, and your life is a lot more complex than I ever imagined. I knew a lot about your radio exploits, but your book is called Voices in My Head. And you're signing copies tonight at the Barnes & Noble store at the Summit.
At Summit.
At the Summit at 7
o'clock. 7 o'clock,
And you have so many people who will still mention your name here. You worked in Louisville two times for Wacky.
Yeah, for Wacky a long time ago until 72. And then came back in 76, I think, at here.
At WHAS Radio. All right, here's a little clip of you, and I just love the last part.
What?
Now, you should know that I hosted a TV show with Angie Humphrey.
I love Angie.
I know you do. You make a reference to her, which it took me. I listened to it. I thought, oh, I get it.
We were friends. Yeah,
I know.
You couldn't tell sometimes.
You were talking with then-President Jimmy Carter. You were both voices.
Jimmy Carter, yes.
Jimmy Carter.
I used to do him. I don't know if I do him anymore.
Actually,
it was pretty good.
He had given a speech the night before, and he was calling to ask you how well he had done.
Okay.
And you told him it was boring, and he needed to juice it up a little bit with a contest or something. Now, here you go. This is your tape from 1977.
How do you mean a contest? What sort of contest?
Well, see, as you were doing your speech, say, and you were reaching a very climactic moment, suddenly you're going to really lay something on them, all of a sudden the people hear,
ha, ha,
and they know it's time to call in, and then they could win, five extra degrees of heat for that night. I think that's stupid. Why, no, all contests are stupid, but they work.
Well, maybe they do. Maybe I'll think about that. You know,
I'm not J. Walter Thompson. I mean, I can't come up with everything, but I would like to help.
Well, that's very nice of you, Gary. By the way, before I go, I'd just like to say thank you, and a very warm thank you to Angie Humphrey for coming back from her honeymoon early and saving all that energy.
Well, thank you for calling. Oh, sir, to say that.
Oh, yeah. It's all right. Oh, it's nice talking to you. Yes, sir. Bye, sir.
So did Angie take okay to the references you made
kidding?
To
yes,
her?
She loved it.
An overly
Angie
sensual
knew
woman.
And she was the talk of the town, not just because she was beautiful, but because she was good at what she did, and she was just funny about it, and she loved it. She's did some things. She came over to the house a few times and that kind of thing. You know, we were never home, but. But she came over, knocked on the door.
She was delightful. She and I hosted a TV show for a year.
What is she doing these days?
Well, that's what I was getting ready to tell you. The last I heard from her, she was in divinity school down around in Evansville, Indiana.
I'm glad she waited.
She had a bit of a wild life.
That would have been an awful waste.
A gorgeous woman singing country music.
Oh, she's making candy now. Okay.
And occasionally... occasionally, I understand that you transposed... the syllables in her last name, Humphrey.
Yeah.
Occasionally you would flip the last syllable
Angie
to the first.
Free. Humphrey. Well, I was dyslexic.
Is that
and,
what it was?
Yeah, and I would say, Angie, free up. And free up. I always said free up.
Free up.
Other people took other things from me, but I had no idea what they're talking about. I got it from my dog.
Well, you can never buy an NFL team now, buddy. They'll never let you do that.
Right.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's okay for us to continue on talking about the balloon situation now because there was no one on board.
All that time, you're looking, you're worrying, and there was no one there. The kid, the kid probably is the one that cut it free and then ran and is hiding in a closet.
It weren't me, Mama.
Oh, yeah, we left him at Grandma's last night. Forgot. Oh, hey, sorry about that, networks.
Now, they're happy. I mean, they got some free time.
The parents of the century right there, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Where's the kid? He's 6 years old. They should know. And you'd think he would show up now. Or maybe he did show up, and they said, they'll get back in the closet. It's too late.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. We're getting some publicity for our balloon company.
Yeah.
He's no longer in the danger zone. In fact, he never was. Law enforcement sources saying that the balloon that was flying across Colorado a little while ago, empty. Although they scared all of America by telling us there was a six-year-old afloat, which would make for an interesting...
And John, who wanted to talk about FDR, had to wait, and he didn't get the allotted time that he normally would get.
He was very excited about FDR, too. He's lived his whole life like FDR.
I guess when you pick someone that you're devoted to that person, and no matter how... I mean, it wasn't boring. I mean, today you may look like that, you know. And,
he was boring, Gary. Come on.
Yeah. He was a great... He was maybe the first great communicator. He did characters.
He did?
Yeah. When he'd go up and do his speeches on radio. And,
this country needs
Hey, Matt. You want a coat?
That's my pal, Wiggles.
He would bite onto that cigarette holder, too.
You got it.
He looked a little like Popeye. All right, mm-hmm. We have to say hello to Vicky Lynx, who understands on the line with us. Vicky?
Hello.
Hello. How's life treating you, Vicky?
Life is fantastic.
You're the Big Splash person, is that right?
I am the Big Splash person.
All right, tomorrow morning we have some kind of deal going with you on our website, Big Splash Adventure. What is that exactly?
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, Vicky Lynx from Big Splash Adventure, and that's tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock on our website at WHAS.com. We do big deals every Friday morning. Gary Burbank's in the studio with us today. He has a book called Voices in My Head. Man, oh man, I can't believe how many fights you were in as a youngster.
Yeah, you know, I was like, you know, as my mother used to say, boy, you stand up when you should shut up. Look, I mean, let me take the teeth out that I lost even back in those days. I mean, and I used to go to the Y to practice boxing because I knew I would stand up instead of shut up. And I used to get beat around a fair real bad. I never won one, I don't think. Although, in the book, it talks about how the toughest guy in school, I face him. And the way I told the story to Greg Hoard, the author of the book, I said, look, I think it ended with this guy saying, okay, and he's a tough guy. You want to quit now? Well, yeah, sure I do. If you want to quit, I want to quit. You know, and so we quit. But then I see the book, and two other eyewitnesses have me just beating this guy half to death. And I'm thinking, this guy's from a really tough family. I mean, he had two brothers who were killed in prison. And he had, you know, a very tough reputation. I'm thinking, what if he sees this now and says, we're going to finish this, pal. And he comes up here and kicks my butt. So I'm starting in denial now on this. I didn't say that. It was David Welch, the guy, my friend, and Eddie Braddock who said that.
You had, though, a fascinating childhood in that you were taken to Mississippi for a while to pick cotton because I guess the family needed extra help.
Well, yeah, see I was like, even in those days, still a daydreamer, couldn't do a whole lot, you know, with anything. My sister, who was 2 years younger than me at six, I think she was six, I was eight, she picked, I think, $4 worth of cotton. I picked 8 cents worth of cotton. So they decided, okay, we're going to make you the water boy. And so I cut my hand. I was up at the house waiting to take the water down. And there was a rooster it's in the book too about this rooster and I that used to have these great fights.
Right.
And I dove off the porch with a pocket knife in my hand trying to catch the rooster and cut him, you know, and I dove off the porch, missed the rooster, the pocket knife collapses, cuts my hand. And so I'm thinking, I gotta get that water down there now. And I'm bleeding, so I wrap it up in a towel and I bled in the water. And when I got it down to the fields, my Uncle Winford and all of them, they look up at me coming. They go, oh, there's the water. Good. Good cold water. And then they look and it's tainted kind of red. And they look at me and say, that's water's pink. I said, yeah, I put Kool-Aid in it. Because I didn't want to be, you know. So they finally gave up on me. And
they did. I was reading in here that, I'll just read you a couple sentences out of this early chapter here. In short order, Papa, Irene, and Winford learned what Raymond and Dot, that's your parents, had told them. Billy, that's you.
That's my real name, Billy Purser. Yeah.
Billy was dangerous with tools of all kinds and accident-prone as well. Even at play, Billy was at risk. The boy tugged at their hearts, always in motion, bright, good-looking, forever talking, but they found him a caution. Later, when he recalled that summer, he thought they embraced him because they thought he wasn't quite right, daydreaming and telling stories.
Yeah, yeah, and I was kind of like that. I tried to, but then I found my niche. I thought, what can I get into where I can be a total moron? And radio.
That's it.
And it worked, you know.
So Gary goes off to the Army, and then you thought you were going to go to radio school.
Yeah.
You thought you'd work that out with him.
By the way, if you're going to sign up for the Army, Marines, whatever, I did that. I was 17 years old, and I went down to the... And they had so nice at the recruiting office. Gosh, they were nice.
Hello, son. Can we get
Come
you a
on
suit
in.
Up?
You know, have a seat.
Put your feet up.
Yeah. You want a soft drink? Yeah. And so I said, look, I would like to be in Armed Forces Radio. I've heard you have that, and I want to be a DJ. And he said, oh, that's easy. I said, you can sign me up for that? Yeah. You sign up right here for regular Army. Regular Army? Yeah, sign regular Army. And then when you get to boot camp, you tell your sergeant you're supposed to be a DJ. Well, all right. And I did that, and we got there. I was, you know, to Columbia, and then got on the Army bus to go to Fort Jackson. I pulled up, and they had been so nice until it was about 10 o'clock at night. This guy comes charging on the bus. What are you a bunch of maggots supposed to be? And I'm thinking, why is this guy acting like this?
I'm a DJ.
And so it's about 10 guys on the bus, and he's going back and forth and basically, you know, throwing people off the bus, just throwing them off. You. And I'm the last guy. Finally gets to me and says, what's your story? This isn't my stop. He grabbed me, and I'm supposed to be a DJ. So he ends up, and you can see the sergeants laughing when I said that. I noticed they were laughing at me, and he had me get a rake when they took us to the barracks. He said, you got to make some radio waves with this rake. And for like 2 hours, I'm trying to make straight lines with a rake underneath the barracks.
Teaching you a lesson.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they had you climbing poles and hanging wires.
I had more accidents than the entire battalion falling off of telephone poles.
Ultimately, of course, he found radio. We'll get to that story. And I want to have you impersonate Bill Bailey.
You're old Duke there.
You're old Duke.
You're Duke of Louisville. Yeah, you're the new Duke.
Gary Burbank in the studio. He has a book.
I used to do his voice.
Yes, we must clarify that statement right away. Express yourself. We say that all the time around here.
Paul Rogers is still alive. What? I didn't know that. I got to say hello.
That was another Paul Rogers.
Okay.
Cast, I suppose. Later in the broadcast today, today's men, the worst in history of all the collection of men in history. Apparently, today's men are the worst, according to new results. And, of course, there's dumb criminal news yet to come. And a woman pulled a lottery hoax. You'll have to hear about it. That's coming up later on the broadcast. For now, Gary Burbank's in the studio. He's the author or co-author.
I didn't author it at all. In fact, they came to me and said, can you write this book? I said, no, I can't write a book. But they had an author that could. And they said, well, how about if he writes it and then you just tell him your stories? And I did. And so it came out. He wrote it kind of a novelistic approach. It's an easy read.
It's terrific.
It's kind of like it's a little more than a coffee table book. It's more of a, you know, bathroom lengthy type.
You've been into some tight situations in your life, and you've always worked your way out of them. I remember a repo man showing up. Was that Jackson, Mississippi?
Jackson, Mississippi. Yeah, you know, it was a disc jockey. I mean, we were expected to pay for half the car, and then they have to go to a different city to find it. And they would always do that. I was amazed at how, I'm in Jackson, Mississippi. I bought this thing in Tallulah, Louisiana. They'll never find me. The next day, you know, they're there. And I get your car. Yeah, I've been there. It's okay. You know, I'm a DJ.
But you were on stations like in Louisiana, and a guy would drive through and hear you and say, that guy's good. And then he'd want to bump you up to the next size city.
Yeah, then you'd move to the next market. And you find, what you're trying to do is get to a place that you know, what you did is phenomenal. I mean, you were able to stay in your hometown, and you were able to, get on the air, rule the airwaves, and just, you know, have a nice career at home. And it's tough to do that because, I mean, I looked at Louisville as home, and I still do in many, many ways. But I ran into a station manager who I knew I wouldn't get along with. And so
here, you mean?
Yeah, here at HAS, yeah. He was a, you know, fine fellow, I assume, but we didn't think the same way.
He and Paul Rogers died in that same car.
Yeah, I was, you know, and Paul actually, you know, Paul, I think Paul was possibly the guy that maybe has saved me a couple of times in situations. Like, Paul was the kind of guy that when the manager came in, Paul would say, you know, don't you have something better to do? Get out of here and leave the guy on the air alone. Paul was always the kind of guy that, like, we're in trouble. Where's Paul?
You had a great run at Wacky Radio, and then you took all your buddies and went to New Orleans.
Yeah, Len King, myself, and we went to New Orleans. That's in the book. That's chronicled. And it was, what a fun time that was. A fun 8 months.
I mean, you tore him up in New Orleans.
But I was here, in fact, at HAS when I get this bear hug from behind, and I turn around. It was a derby party, and it was Al Hurt. And he said, wow. Gary Burbank, I've been looking for you for 10 years, you know, after I had left there and went to Detroit and came back here.
You got famous for, at HAS, for one of the things you did was snow sharks. It was that huge snow of 77.
Well, you know, I think people needed something to get in. I didn't really do much on that. I was driving to work one day, and I looked out, and I saw this piece of ice that came up, and it looked a whole lot like a shark. And then, you know, Jaws had been out, like you said, in the summertime, and then the storm had everybody with cabin fever, and I just mentioned snow sharks. And all of a sudden, the phones just light up. And pretty soon, in 2 days there, every pickup in town had Snow Shark Patrol on it. The newspaper, when they would put pictures of fins behind horses running in fields and things. I think everybody was going crazy, and they just needed an outlet. And I worked really hard on a lot of pieces and a lot of bits and things like that, but that was one I didn't work at all on. It just kind of happened.
You've worked with some masterful radio talents over the years. None wilder than Bill Bailey.
Your old Duke, yes.
Here's a little piece out of your book.
Okay.
A guy was trying to put together, assemble a great team at Wacky Radio. And at WKLO, the competition, Bill Bailey was there, the Duke of Louisville. Bailey's voice was made of barbed wire, sharpened by an abiding attraction to Kentucky bourbon, ice-cold beer chasers, and a two-pack-a-day smoking habit.
Yeah.
Bailey was unguarded, reckless, and defiant. He growled his way through every show, saying whatever came to his mind. And then there's a quote in here of his talking at Halloween time, so I'll just let you take it and impersonate your buddy.
Is Bailey? He charged the microphone, his audience, like a street fighter with razor blades in his toes and his boots. Tonight, it's Halloween. All the little cuties will be coming around looking for candy. The little urchins, the little darlings. I love them. With kids, after the kids come the punks, looking for trouble, causing trouble. Do what I do to these punks. Shoot them so they don't have to worry about them coming back next year. My good dear friends, Bailey bemoaned into the microphone. My life has come to this. Look at me. A bottle of Alka-Seltzer, a stack of Teeny Bopper records. Good God.
He loved that curmudgeon role.
Yeah, he was, but he lived it. I mean, Reed Yaden used to be his keeper.
Mm-hmm.
And there are better stories off the air. They say Bill Hinnis, the program director of WKLO, used to leave a bottle of whiskey outside the Wacky Studios, as Bailey would see it when he came in the studio. And so Bailey would get the whiskey, come on the air, and drink the whiskey, supposedly. So he left the whiskey out for about a week every day, and then he quit because Bailey sounded a hell of a lot better drunk. I'm not going to give him any more whiskey. Let him buy his own now.
All right, your music career, you're still involved in that, too, aren't you? In a band now?
I'm a band called Blue Run. Half of us are in Florida. Half of us are around the Cincinnati area. And it's really good players, really good players. But I was with the Marquees back. I was one of the 275 original Marquees. We had a hit in 62, I think, or 61. It's just a long time ago. And I'll tell you who it was. It was Steve Cropper and Duck Dunn. Charlie Freeman, we were all in the same high school. And you talk about the original rock and roll high school. I mean, I could just start naming you guys that have hits, you know, from Messick High School in Memphis. And so I got out of the Army, and I've been playing in the Army. I was a drummer then. And so now I'm playing guitar, but I was a drummer. And I got out of the Army, and I'm kind of looking for a gig, and I find out that I didn't even know that they were the Marquees. And so I got a tryout, and bam, you know, I got with a band and was on the road. You played Texas one day. Where were we tomorrow night?
West Virginia.
What? I thought DJ stuff was hard. That's why I didn't worry about going from Louisville to Detroit or, you know, in, you know, for like 3 months. Because I was going from, you know, Texas to West Virginia in one night as a musician.
And you recorded in some famous studios, too. And one day I understand that Elvis Presley was there in Memphis, and you crossed paths. Is that a myth or is that a fact?
No, it's just, you know, even I wasn't sure about that for a while because I was 14 years old hitchhiking, right? And my buddy is David Welch at the time. And so we see this black Chevrolet panel truck drive by. And I look up and I see in the truck Elvis Presley, no doubt about it. He's maybe about 21, I guess, at the time. And he goes by us, and he looks at me, just catches my eye. And as he drives by, I turn to David. That was Elvis. He said, what would Elvis be doing driving an old 48 Chevrolet panel truck? Yeah, maybe not. Then he turned in, but then he came back out onto the main street just right down from us. I said, that was Elvis. He's going to pick us up. And sure enough, he pulled up, and we both went running for the truck, both of us wanting to get next to Elvis, you know. So I was faster. So I got there, opened the door, jump in, and I'm trying to think of something cool to say, so I said, You're Elvis, aren't you? That's all I could get, you know. And so he,
yeah, man.
And so we, he, where you boys going? We told him where we live. I'll take you over there. And so he starts telling us about his movies and things. His new movie, better than his last movie. I remember that. But then he saw these few girls coming down the street, two or three girls walking. He says, hey, man, watch this. And so he hangs his head out the window as we go by and says, hey, baby. And this one girl looks up, and you can see out the little block window in the back, she walked right straight into a telephone pole. And Elvis thought that was great. Hey, man, did you see that, man? Yeah, Elvis, that was cool, man. So he takes me home, and there's nobody. My sister's not outside. Nobody's in the neighborhood. No one saw it. And so I told this story on the air for, you know, years. I told it here at HAS. And so my wife, Carol, who, you know, she keeps me in line most of the time about what I'm talking. She knows when I embellish and when I don't. I may be embellished a little bit. I mean, there was no monkey. I used to tell, you know, I brought up more things in the story about Elvis. But she said, that's just something you dreamed up a long time ago and started telling the story, and now you believe it. I thought, yeah, you may be right. And so we had a high school reunion about a few years ago, and David was there. And I saw David, and I said, Carol, I'm not going to say a word to him. You know I have not seen him. No. So let's just see if he brings it up. So Dave came over. We were talking about 5 or 10 minutes. All of a sudden, he looked at me and said, hey, remember that time Elvis picked us up? I was telling the truth.
Validation.
And Carol said, I guess it's true then. He really did.
Gary Burbank has a book called Voices in My Head. And it's he'll be signing copies of it tonight at Barnes & Noble at the Summit, 7 till 9 tonight. We're back in a moment on 84 WHAS. Here with 84 WHAS. Terry Miner's here. Gary Burbank in the studio. So you're not officially an author. Your name's not listed in there as author.
Oh, no. And I'm proud to not be the author.
Oh, come on.
No, he did a great job, and he needs to be recognized as that. Greg Horde, who is from Louisville, by the way.
He's telling your story. Voices in My Head's the name of the book, and you can meet Gary tonight at the Barnes & Noble in the Summit.
You probably met him, because when you used to come into... Terry used to come in and watch us at Wacky when he was a little kid.
Wacky Radio.
Yeah, and he'd come in and watch, and Greg Horde was the same. He was probably sitting next to you on the couch.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Can we be on the radio?
Well, you did finally.
That's true.
You just dropped this kind of talk.
The way that happens, hey, could you guys get out of the way? Because there's some cute girls out in front. You're blocking the view.
Yeah.
The cute girls in the showcase window.
The show. We used to, there was a lot of mooning going on. It was a serial mooning down 4th Street.
Yes.
Back when people would drive by and moon the guy on the air. And then we got to the point where we're like, why am I being mooned and not mooning back?
I already know the answer to this question because I have done this before myself, and that's impersonated people that I work with and put their voices on the air, like some of the newscasters and so forth.
Yeah.
Chuck Olmstead, Action News, you remember?
Also,
He's gone. You would do characters and sometimes twist their names around, like Barney Arnold, you called him...
Arnie Barnold.
Arnie Barnold here. This morning, good morning, everybody.
and at first, Barney was not real happy with that, but a little later, he saw people laughing, and he thought, but he would never allow anyone else. Steve George, who worked middays here for a while, introduced him one day. Said, with Farm Report, I think he came in that morning. He said, here's Arnie Barnold. And on the air,
said it backwards.
He looked at him, and he said,
my name is Barney Arnold to you.
He goes,
yes, sir. He understood right away.
He was the
farm and garden guy prior to Fred Wishy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had a character named Pete Moss. Was that based on...
Uncle Pete Moss was based on Arnie Bartle, but then I went to Arnie Bartle after I got tired of Uncle Pete Moss, and so I figured I could get away with it.
This is from 1977.
Oh, you got something?
Pete Moss at work.
We have carefully accumulated a huge assortment of salvaged dentures, and now these fully reconditioned choppers are available at a fraction of their original cost at Pete Moss's new downtown outlet, Unclaimed Place. Don't suffer the agony of loose-fitting dentures a minute later. Rush to the privacy of an Unclaimed Place showroom, where you'll be able to rummage through tub after tub of light-new dentures until you find a set that fits perfectly. Hurry to Unclaimed Plates today, and just imagine how great it'll be eating corn on the cob without sounding like an octopus playing the castanets.
That was pretty funny, actually, okay?
The accents that you have, now you grew up in Memphis and Mississippi.
A lot of the southern stuff came through. But, you know, I was one of these people that could hear, you know, and I think that's all about doing impressions is about hearing the way someone's idiosyncrasies in their speech comes out and then being able to mimic that. And it's just, it's a gift.
Also, some people become offended if you'll do an accent. You know, their New Jersey guy. What was the character
Jersey guy? I didn't do a Jersey guy.
I had a Northeastern guy.
I probably did. I did a preacher when I was here.
Deuteronomy.
Reverend Deuteronomy Skaggs, Little Radio Church. I'm the white wing in gospel. That was a radio station guy that I met. Speaking of people in the station in Lake Providence, Louisiana.
That's when you were engineering a Sunday morning show and you were talking about how the gospel groups or the preachers would come in and then you would make sure the mics were set up and then you described a day when the other studio didn't work and all these rather large women in the choir were pressing their bosom up against you.
I thought they were fat.
I'm trying to be nice.
Yeah, and they had very large bazooms and they were all, they were like 20 people, and it's a little bitty room, and they're just, and I got hit by one of those. And those things can hurt. They can be weapons. And I mean, knock me to the floor. And, but this preacher, when he preached, he was like, and I want to tell you, I want you right now to reach in them jeans and pull out them greens. I'm talking that green salad of salvation. And don't make me holler. And don't make me shout. I want you to turn them pockets inside out. And then go into that stuff. And well, how can you not do an impression of that when you hear it? Today's biblical quiz. What stretches further? It's in the book of Hominomines. Not your old, not your new, but your present testament writ by me. It goeth on it to say it. What stretches further, skin or rubber? I'll tell you it's skin. Because Moses tied his ass to a tree and walked 40 miles.
Hallelujah.
Amalula.
Come on with it.
Where's Amalula?
It's 4:46. We're in here laughing. Yeah, cutting up here. Sorry, man. Excuse me. All right. Now, I was playing a little bit of a segment of you from, I don't know, 30-something years ago here on WHS. You were interviewing a man who had a foot up where his head should be.
Yeah.
Florsheim. His name was Bill Florsheim or something.
Yeah.
So you're talking to this guy. That's your today's interview, and here's just a segment of it.
How do you manage to get along with the opposite sex?
Well, Gary, girls love guys with soul.
I see you're a quick wit.
Yeah. Oh, I got a long tongue, too.
That should help.
Okay.
Now, that was about as racy as you could get on this station.
You could get better 30 years ago than you can get today. Today's a lot nastier. I mean, yeah, and trying to do that.
Gary Burbank, of course, is just an icon to everybody on the radio across America. Everybody knows his work. You know, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the guidance, the tutelage you've given me, the kindness you've shown me over the years.
And you made me proud, son. You did. I mean, I'm dead serious about that.
We'll
be modeling for a minute or two here. As a kid, he sat on that couch on Wacky, and we'd always talk, and you'd ask me about this or that, and we'd always give a little time. And then to see you come up and do the things you've done, and people will tell me, you know, Terry sounds a little like you at times. And I said, I'm his mentor. What are you talking about? I'm proud of that.
You better believe it.
I won't be a mentor.
I hope I do. Yeah. Of all the characters, and that Gilbert Gnarly character you did was brilliant.
Yeah, they are. I never did it here. I wish I had.
You can't call people anymore. You can't do that anymore because there's...
You know how you get away with that? I want to be able to do Earl for you. I don't take up too much time, but I'll tell you. Our sister station was a hard... They started doing this. They got a girl on the phone and got her boss on the other line. Anyway, she got really upset because she got fired after she said she didn't know her boss was on the other line.
Mm-hmm.
Sued the station, got $35,000. FCC fined them $15,000 for not telling her she was on the air with her boss.
Correct.
And he comes to me and says, we were fined $50,000 for our first phone call. How do you do it? And I said, it's real simple. I don't make anybody mad. Gilbert is the guy that, you know, if I call KY Jelly and say, I love your Kentucky Jelly.
Right.
It does have a neutral taste on toast. and that you know, they don't get mad at me for that, you know, and no one ever complains. And so that's the whole thing. If you get complaints, then you can get sued.
What a lot of people don't realize is they've heard prank phone calls on the radio in the last several years, and they're actors that people are talking to.
Thank you. Yeah.
There are a lot of people doing that. Gary Burbank was calling real people and doing that, but then they set up certain sweatshops, if you will, of actors for radio guys to call, and the people, what am I? Oh, you're calling the 1-800 flowers person? Okay, yeah, great.
I called like it was a rabbi in Chicago. It was a real rabbi, and I said, I'd like to become Jewish. He said,
Well, that's very nice, but there's a lot to think about in this respect.
Yes, I've already thought about it.
Well, why do you want to be Jewish?
I'm tired of people referring to me as a genital.
I think that's a Gentile, sir.
No, it's a Gentile.
Gary's most popular character has to be Earl Pitts, and he's a guy modeled off someone in your family?
Yeah, my dad. My dad used to get up in the morning, and I'd sit down with him, he'd get a cup of coffee, and he'd say, you know what makes me sick? And then I would, you may go into it one time?
I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to snap your photo while you're doing Earl Pitts.
I'm thinking, what is he doing with the camera?
Because I want to have a picture of you doing Earl Pitts live. All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, Earl Pitts, this is syndicated. You're on 100-some stations across America doing this voice still. So what, do you record these every week?
Yeah, once a week I record them, put them up on a satellite, and somebody, you know, gets them down.
And then
shoot them up with a firecracker.
The basic premise is he's angry about something every day.
You know what makes me sick? That's you know what makes me so mad? I want to drop my pants, take a butter knife, spread Alpa all over my butt cheeks, superglue my tongue to a fire hydrant, and wait for a pack of wild pit bulls to come along and lick it off. How come it is when you sneeze, people say, God bless you. But when you toot, nobody says nothing. I mean, it seems to me, you blow the back end out of your britches, that's when you ought to be calling on help from the Almighty. I mean, you sneeze. Say, Gesundheit. That there's German, I guess, in the old days. Gesundheit, God bless. Heit meaning bless. Gesund meaning God. I, for one, ain't getting on my knees and looking up to the sky and saying, our Gesund, who art in heaven. People thought, see, when you sneeze, they'd say, God bless you, before the devil could sneak into your body while you was wiping the soul off your nose. Let me tell you something. The devil's going to be happy to crawl up your butt. I mean, how much, he lives in hell. How much worse can your butt be than hell? Wake up, America. Next time you hear somebody cut one in the elevator, just look over at him and say, Gesundheit. Now, we might have to change God bless you to good God bless you. I'm Earl Pitts, American Pizza.
Gary Burbank, the legend. It's been great having you in here.
Man, it's been a trip. And thanks for the golf today. That was great fun, too.
We had a good time. The book is called Voices in My Head. Gary Burbank is written by Greg Hoard, H-O-A-R-D. But you can meet Gary tonight at the Barnes & Noble in the Summit. You'll be there 7 till 9 tonight.
And you might even slide by yourself.
I shall.
Okay. If you get a chance, I'd like to see
you. No, I'm coming by there to see you again. Yeah. We'll lie about our golf. What golf scores are we going to lie about? 82s?
We don't have to lie about
a pair of 82s.
About a 79.
No, that's right. Exactly right.
I could lie as good as you. Better, maybe.
I would say so. Gary Burbank, the book's Voices in My Head. Thanks so much for
the time. Thanks, Gary.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.